Good morning and welcome to this session on preparing tabular data model for PowerView reporting. My name is Peter Myers. My accent is not even close to this part of the world, and I'm sorry I don't speak any German. I'm Peter Myers. I'm a BI expert. I've come probably the longest distance to present at this SQL Saturday event, unusually on a Thursday, the first for everything. So I'm in fact in Europe to present a whole series of roadshows for Microsoft through Central and Eastern Europe. Unfortunately, Austria is not one of these, but you're very conveniently placed between Ljubljana and Bratislava, which is my destination for tomorrow. So I'm very, very happy to come by and say hello and see Vienna for the first time. That'll be my journey this afternoon. And what I've got to present to you in this hour is a very short topic, but one about working with self-service business intelligence analytics inside Excel. It's the story with tabular database development, or for the self-service analyst, it's the Power Pivot story. And I'm interested to know from this room this morning who here is familiar with Power Pivot. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, about 50% of you. And the story then is, how can we exploit the features available in PowerView reporting? How do we make them available by preparing and optimizing the design of the tabular model? So PowerView reporting is this newer approach to end-user, self-service, visually impressive, minimal effort to produce and explore data. And the experiences that are delivered through PowerView don't happen automatically. Some do, but others will require additional thought, design, and configuration of the data model. And then that is the topic of this session today. Include some details to contact me. I would hope, if you have any questions, that I address them in this session, or feel free to come see me afterwards. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn also. I'd like to talk to you about PowerView. Let's start with what this authoring tool is. Let's then talk very briefly about the BI semantic model, which introduces us to Microsoft's data models that are tabular or multidimensional. And then we'll get into the heart of this topic, and that is, how do we prepare the data model for PowerView reporting? Bonus time permitting, there is this new capability called Power Q&A. Q&A standing for question and answer. This is a new approach that if you can publish this workbook to the Power BI service in the cloud, we can use natural language questions, in English only, unfortunately, but this would then result in the production of PowerView reports automatically. So this is an interesting scenario because it opens up the ability for users to ask questions, to be prompted and suggested and guided through the process of asking a question, and it results in a visualization of the answer that is a PowerView report that then can be explored and manipulated within the browser. So there's a couple of extra topics I'll introduce to extend beyond just PowerView reporting to enable and optimize the Q&A experience through the cloud. All right, so that gives me the session outline. Let's get straight into it with a discussion of what PowerView is. So PowerView is part of reporting services. It's available to you on-premises with SharePoint. If you have Enterprise Edition and the reporting services integrated, and you have a tabular data model, then from a desktop experience or from a browser, we can connect to and create these visually impressive reports. That made itself available in SQL Server 2012. What we saw followed was with Excel 2013, PowerView became an embedded part of the experience. We can now add PowerView sheets to the workbook, and this is usually an interesting scenario when you have a PowerPivot data model already in the workbook. So this is all about high visual design experience, interactivity, and remaining sexy and visually interesting at the same time. So it's available to you in two ways: SharePoint on-premises with reporting services, or with Excel 2013 Professional Plus, or with Office 365 Pro Plus editions. Brief discussion about the BI semantic model. Microsoft provides three different ways to produce data models: Power Pivot, Tabular Project, Multidimensional. What I'm going to point out is that Power Pivot is the self-service story to producing this. It's an Excel story. It allows us to integrate data from different data stores, different data formats, relate, add a usability layer with friendly names, descriptions, data formats, hierarchies for navigation, and then business logic through calculated columns and aggregation logic through calculated fields. That's a lot to take in two sentences, but this is an impressive feature available in Excel that takes this product beyond just core spreadsheeting capabilities to the ability for you to answer potentially sophisticated questions, even off volumes of data that could be tens of millions of rows. The engine that does this is called the X-Velocity In-Memory Analytics Engine. Used to be called the VertiPack Engine. Marketing got hold of it and changed its name. What this engine does on the desktop is load, encode, and compress potentially large volumes of data. Typically 10x compression when this happens. 100 meg of data, 10 meg of data compressed. As an in-memory technology at query time, the engine with brute force scanning can query this and on the fly produce aggregate results to support analytic exploration of data. So this very, very powerful add-in, PowerPivot, supports a data modeling opportunity. The PowerView story will sit on top, as I'll describe. Now, Microsoft also provide Tabular Project. The same technology is available to you as IT professionals. With Visual Studio, there's a project template. Use this technology to create identical data models. Typically, they will scale because you're going to publish them to a server that has more resources so you can deal with large volumes of data and more sophisticated permission management. The story that I have to tell you with PowerView, whether you use PowerView within Excel or to connect to an external tabular database such as this design here, is that the optimization discussion is identical. The Q&A new feature that I've talked about is only currently supported with PowerPivot when published to the Power BI service in the cloud. Next, we'll talk about the multidimensional project. So this is cubes. Cubes are the earlier approach to producing data models. This usually requires a great deal of expertise to design and implement multidimensional. PowerView is supported on top of this, but only when you are using SharePoint Reporting Services PowerView. There is no current story that Excel's PowerView can connect and visualize a multidimensional data model. All right. The great thing about these technologies is they allow working with a vast array of different data sources. And then when we look at the visualization on top of the data model with our focus here on PowerView, anything that queries with MDX can be used to query the data model, but PowerView uses DAX to query. Okay, and this is why there's a limitation. In Excel, DAX is the only supported language, therefore, PowerPivot as the internal data model or a tabular database becomes the source for PowerView. What changed with cumulative update 8 of SQL Server was that we could also use DAXMD to query across, but again, not supported yet in Excel. So with that brief background, I'm going to introduce you to a workbook. It looks empty. I have a sheet here, and inside the workbook, if I manage it, I have a PowerPivot data model. Looks something like this. I'll introduce it to you very briefly. The major subject area is a sales table representing the accumulation of sales transactions by date, by employee, by the reseller that sold the product, and by the product definition itself. And I've then created some calculations like the distinct products, the sum of units, the sum of sales. Related to this is a salesperson table, details about a salesperson, and a related table that classifies the salesperson by sales region, and country and group. Products are defined down here. Date, which is critical to the model to support filtering and analysis by time, is defined here. And then the resellers are defined in a table here. A second subject area was added for the quotas. So this data model has been designed to answer questions like, what are the salespeople selling? What countries are we selling to? What products by group, by category, by subcategory? And with the addition of quota, we could then define a sales performance KPI. What did the salespeople sell? What were they supposed to sell? And is the variance good or bad? All right, so that's a very, very brief introduction. I usually spend a good hour building up this model, but the focus here is post-development. This is what do we now do to take this basic design and make it work optimally inside PowerView. So the first thing is really just a good practice anyway, and that is to apply friendly names throughout the model. So if you're sourcing from a relational OLTP system, you'll typically find that database developers like to use very cryptic, maybe they make sense to them, but don't make sense to the business user. They sometimes put prefixes on tables, use very short abbreviations, maybe they're in English, not in German. Here is the opportunity in the model to provide friendly names for tables, columns, calculations, KPIs. And it could be as simple as just this, switching across, and instead of calling it an employee table, we call it salespeople. Instead of calling it year, you know, we can rename and we could call it fiscal year. So I've actually done this as part of the model development already. To me, it's an automatic process. And in fact, the wizards that guide you through the importation of data provide you the opportunity to provide and overwrite the source data, the name of the table, with a friendly name. So that's the first thing I'd recommend. And the reason for this is, as you're about to see with PowerView, is that the reports automatically label. You cannot control how it does this. The best you can do is turn the feature off. But if you want automatic labeling of the visualizations, then you want friendly names. The other consideration here is also embedded spaces. As you see, maybe, the lighting is a bit difficult in here, the space between sales and region. The relational table didn't do that. In fact, database developers for relational systems are discouraged from using embedded spaces. It's possible, it just makes it a little more tedious to construct queries. We must delimit the entire name, and for some reason, relational people don't like doing that. So again, user-friendly. If you want it to look good in your report, put those embedded spaces in here. Be concise, unambiguous, but yet be meaningful to the business users. Next area would be that of descriptions. So there's the ability to right-click a table like this. Let me go across to the data view of this table, and on the tab, I can right-click and add a text description. These descriptions will surface as tooltips in the PowerView field list. Let me type in here, products as defined by marketing department. And I could also do this for the calculations, like on the sales table, I have a sales calculation here. Let me go ahead and add a description for it to clarify that this represents gross sales as opposed to net sales. Next, column and calculated field formats. So this is the embedding of presentation logic into the model itself. And I continually refer to these data models as being a single version of the truth around a particular subject area. They represent data, business logic in the form of calculations. They represent even presentation logic, which allows you in a single definition to specify how reuse of the data and its presentation should take place. So columns have this ability. We can format them. We can also right-click the calculated fields, and it is my practice that every time I create a calculated field, I format it. What PowerView is going to do is use that format by default. It can be overridden by the business user, but more than likely, if you got it right, there should be no need for them to change anything. Column categorizations is the next consideration. Those first three might be almost an automatic behavior, just as a best practice you know, whether it's PowerView reporting or not, friendly names, good formats for your calculations. The descriptions actually is one that you may not consider because the only time I've seen them occur anywhere is through PowerView only. The topic of column categorizations comes next. This being a tabular model, as you can clearly see here, the model consists of tables, tables consist of columns, and relationships are then defined between tables. The next layer of metadata is to describe the content. So, the reseller table. The selection of a column on the advanced tab shows us that we can categorize the content. You'll get a different list of options according to the data type of that column. For a text column, it could be classified as an address, city, continent, country, postal code, even that it's a URL to an image, to a web URL. And so what you see here is that city has been categorized and automatically suggested. What has happened when we first created the table and loaded data, there are algorithms that will look at the names and the content of the column. I don't know how the magic actually works here, but with reasonable accuracy, as you can see here, the suggested ones were automatically classified for you. Now, by the way, this is a feature that is turned on by default. Some people may not regard it as a feature. And here on the settings, categorization, detect data categorization automatically. You could turn this off if you would like. So this categorization can also be sent up to the internet. This is not a PowerView discussion. But when you're working with PowerPivot, there could be the need to find related data sets. So we've got internal corporate data. Let's relate it to some other interesting data like temperature or geographic demographic information. That if you allow this categorization data to be sent up, the feature is that you could look for suggested related data because it's describing your data. It's not actually going to send the content, but just descriptions of how you've categorized your model. Anyway, the importance of doing this for the optimization in PowerView is that if we correctly categorize columns, and you can see here that state didn't get picked up. Let me specify this is state or province. Country did get picked up. That what PowerView will do in certain circumstances is default a visualization based on the type of data that you have. So clearly a spatial categorization could default to a map representation of your data. The sales region, I have country here as well. Salesperson will be the next discussion. Because PowerView, as I'm about to show you, also enables the visualization of photographs and images. Okay, so with this discussion, the way that it is enabled is that you must either have the binary data of the image in the model itself. As you can see, I was very lucky, and this is unusual in the real world, is that my data source had the photograph of the employee in a column. I simply loaded the binary data in. Now, for binary columns, that enables me to specify that this is an image. And that's halfway there. The discussion is, this is not terribly efficient, especially where you have large volumes, like maybe thousands of employees, and maybe very high-resolution images that are large in size. So we would not recommend ordinarily that you would store the binary data in the model. This technology doesn't do a good job at compressing this data down. So the other approach is that you would publish images to a web server. You would typically do something like this. For the 19 employees I have here, there's an ID, a unique identifier for the employee. We would just produce images, perhaps, with the ID as the file name, .jpg, and then you would have all of these images sitting on a web server in a virtual directory. And then what you would do is come across here and create a calculated column, and you would build up some expression like this. HTTP to my web server, my virtual directory, and then we would concatenate in the employee ID, concatenate in then .jpg. And with this, you would then rename it. And notice the suggestion happened automatically because it has HTTP in there. It's guessing. It's a reference out to an image. Then we would categorize this one as an image URL. There's still one more step that we need to do. I will delete this because that's not how my demo goes. The technology that's used here is optimized for analytic querying, so I need to give you a background. That when you query a tabular model such as PowerPivot, what is really happening is it's doing filtering, group by, and aggregate operations for you. You're almost never concerned with row-level data. All right, it's about the sum of sales filtered by year, grouped by product category. They're the type of questions that this model is optimized to do. As a result of that, we need to do an extra configuration because we need to tell it how to isolate a single row in order to retrieve the binary data for that row. So to make this work, categorization is really step one. Step two is to configure the table behavior. And in table behavior, you can then specify what is the unique column. So what's interesting is this technology doesn't care about the concept of primary key, foreign key. It cares about relationships which must be one to many, and the one side must be unique. If you attempt to put in duplicate values, you will get errors. So there is an implied primary key concept, but still it wants a definite declaration of where that column is. And by enabling that setting, we will now have the images working for us. One last thing to say about images is that you need to take care on where this workbook will be published. So if it's on-premises with SharePoint, and you have the Power Pivot add-in, and you have PowerView in SharePoint, the images could be either embedded or they could be referenced to some location that it could retrieve from. The new story with the Power BI service, and I'll show you this shortly, is you publish the workbook to a cloud service with SharePoint Online, and the reality here is that images must be embedded. They've got no support to retrieve external images, which to me is a little surprising given it's in the internet, and providing that your images were internet-facing. But my understanding is the issue is to do with the they're moving away from Silverlight to HTML5, and they've got a challenge in making the images work. Version 1, what is publicly available today, images must be embedded for this capability to work. Next thing would be keep unique rows. This one's a little trickier to describe. And I think the data model doesn't give me a good example for this. Perhaps I could say first name and last name. In your matrix, if you want state, code, and name together, not nested, because there's a one-to-one relationship between them, you would keep these unique. Next, we can specify defaults. What is the default label? And the salesperson name describes nicely the salesperson and the default image. And in certain situations, PowerView might want to do a default visualization. And so for this table, it knows where to get a descriptive field. It knows where to get an image if there is one. Okay, so we've talked about providing, that's the wrong slide, we've talked about enabling images, I've worked through the table behavior. The next one to talk about is the default field set. So for salesperson, the concept here with PowerView is how can we enable reporting quickly and with as few clicks as possible. Clicking on a single table will add fields to the report. Go ahead, you list what are the fields and in what order with a single click they should be added. Okay, all of this optimization, and I know it's a little painful because you haven't seen PowerView yet, but I actually wanted you to sort of wait and then see it all build up so you can see the intended experience. I can now switch back to the workbook, recognize that that data model is embedded into the workbook, and we can query it via this workbook connection. Take care on the insert tab of the ribbon that when you insert a PowerView sheet, if you have a range of values selected, this is a really stupid thing I think Microsoft did. Am I being recorded? If you have a range of values selected, it thinks you want to report off them. So it'll actually take that range, and without even prompting you, it will add it to the workbook data model, and then it will create a PowerView sheet on it. This is really crazy. Because there's really three things that you might want to do when you click PowerView. You might want to do that, in which case you should at least have the opportunity to confirm that. The second thing is you might then want to report off the workbook data model. That's a tabular source. Or the third thing is you might want to use a workbook connection that has been predefined against an external tabular database. All right, so I don't think they've done a great job in this. My advice to the people doing this is make sure that nothing is selected, a single cell like this, and then simply click on PowerView. PowerView is an add-in that is available as part of Professional Plus Edition. It is disabled by default, intentionally, because it consumes resources. And so the easy thing here is the first time you use it, you're going to enable the add-in for future experiences. It then adds the PowerView sheet to the report. And what it's expressing to us then on the right-hand side is the PowerView fields. So this is the story about what we were just optimizing by providing friendly names, perhaps by hiding columns and tables that we didn't want visible. We're ensuring that the interface is intuitive and makes sense to a business user for the subject that they'll be reporting on. Perhaps I need some clarity by hovering over the product table, the descriptions that I've defined and that can be defined against tables, columns, calculated fields, and KPIs, come back as tooltips, and even for the calculated fields. What is available then are the tables, hierarchies, the levels of hierarchies. We also have columns that are visible, like color. We have calculations and key performance indicators, including the metrics of value, goal, and status. Reseller with its geography hierarchy from country, state, city to reseller. The salespeople with a photo and the salesperson. And finally, the sales region with its hierarchy. That is the interface upon which the user has to lay out a PowerView report. And so let me create one here by calling it Salesperson Performance. And what I typically do is copy that title. So each sheet already includes a text box to promote putting a title in here. I will typically copy this and rename the sheet at the bottom because users will typically navigate between reports by using the tabs. Now, this is what we refer to as the canvas. It's a blank canvas, and we lay out our data to visualize and explore here. On the right-hand side is the filters pane, and any filters that you apply here, for example, simply by dragging year into filters, I will be able to select, even multi-select, multiple fiscal year options. I've also got the ability to combine filters. So what if I also bring in color, and I'm only interested in those 2 years and silver and black? What that will mean, and if I minimize it, is that all data that I visualize on the sheet will be filtered by that context. What I don't like about that design is that users may not appreciate that the filters have been applied or that they can even expand or perhaps someone closed it. It's a little dangerous. So clearly anyone working with PowerView should have a little bit of good education with this. What I'm going to do is remove them for now. And a technique that I prefer to use where possible is that I would just select the fiscal year field, and the automatic behavior in PowerView is that it adds that field to a table. Therefore, we see the creation of a table consisting of this column. And it's really quite straightforward that data always starts as a table. And then if I'm interested to see the aggregation of sales, then I just bring in the sales field and distinct count. And that it's very easy for me then to filter ascending, descending by column. There's also the ability to pop this out to really make this a focus. If you have multiple visualizations, we can pop it back in. And there's also the ability to filter at data visualization level. So there's global filtering for the sheet, there's filtering at the visualization level, and this is where I could then put a filter that is only where country is Australia. Okay, and then there's the sales that were achieved, and there's only 1 year for sales. Okay, they are the basics. Everything begins as a table, and what's important to know then is that you can switch the visualization across from a table to a matrix, to a chart, bar charts, column charts, line scatter, pie charts, and to maps. It always starts as a table, and it's up to you to transform it to a different visualization. All right, so I'm going to select and delete that. The design that I will have will introduce the fiscal year, and if you have a single column table, you can switch this to a slicer. And so this is another technique for filtering globally, but visually you can see the result, or rather the settings of the filter, and you can interact with it. So I typically increase the font size. I end up with something like this, and I have single select. By pressing the control key, I also have multi-select. And if I want to select everything, I have an eraser up here. Okay, so let me filter on fiscal year 2010. Click in a blank area. Now, remember the default field set. To promote rapid layout of a report design, with a single click of the salesperson table, the default field set in the order that I specified are added to the sheet. And then we see that the images are working also, thanks to the two configurations of the categorization and the table behavior to specify the unique column. That's all you need to do. And it's a really, really easy thing to achieve, I've discovered with some customers. You know, maybe you have thousands of employees, that might be impractical. But maybe that you've got four sales territories. So coming up with a basic image that, you know, represents these, or the flags of the countries that you're selling to, it's an easy win to start to make your data more interesting and appealing. All right, just make sure you've got the binary data in there, or publish them to a web server and reference them through a calculation. If it's a personal solution, Microsoft don't talk about this, but you can reference them via B Drive Photos folder. All right, but clearly that's only going to work if you open and interact with Power View on your desktop. So I'll do that for testing, and then I'll publish them to a web server, and then I'll update the calculation so it references with the HTTP. Okay, a cool thing we can do, and by tiling, it switches this data across, and it uses the table's default label and default image. And so what you can now see is the ability to filter this tiled region by a single employee at a time. We still see our table in here, but the table is being filtered by a single selection here. So I'm going to remove this table and produce a new table inside the tiled area. When I click all, let me introduce month. And now I can see the 12 fiscal months of fiscal year 2010. If I change this to 2011, these are the 12 months of fiscal year 2011. And then I can introduce calculations like, I want to know what the number of units were, distinct products, sales, and from quota, give me the quota, and then give me variance percent, and give me status. Okay, so unfortunately, I'm running out of space. That's a little bit better. So with relative ease, I would hope you think, is that I can produce with a few clicks a report that lets me filter by year and by individual employee. What do you think? That answers the questions, what are salespeople doing? Are there any concerns with what's happening here? You know, if we find someone like, I don't know, let's find a terrible salesperson. How's Stephen doing? Jose, Jillian. We could apply a filter in here and say, we're interested where, can we do this with status? Variance percent. What if I do a variance percent here and I say I'm only interested where the variance is, and it might be hard for you to see that, but somewhere that's negative, let me edit this in a better way, is less than zero. All right, and then that lets us filter on just the exceptions, what was going wrong in that year. So this is the type of exploration and discovery and even what-if analysis that could be achieved with this type of tool. Let me go ahead and reset that. Now, this morning, earlier, I talked about the two different data modeling technologies. They are Tabular, achieved with Power Pivot, and the Tabular database. There is the older type and still highly relevant multi-dimensional modeling with cubes. So architecturally, they're very, very different, yet from a business user perspective, they deliver an almost identical experience. Okay, interestingly, the data models that are tabular, they're not multi-dimensional in design, but they expose an interface. Tables become dimensions, and the hierarchies remain as hierarchies, and the calculated fields get assigned to a measures dimension. This isn't the reality, this is the interface that is given. And then they can be queried by using MDX. So this enables tabular models to be queried with the same language that cubes use. Microsoft did this deliberately to ensure compatibility with existing reporting tools. You could use this newer approach, the tabular approach, and you could use existing tools that use MDX and query them. Now, here is where the difference comes in. That when you develop a cube, the measures, the aggregation logic, are actually fixed into the design of the data model. The reason for this is that the optimization for performance, for querying performance, is that cubes will pre-process and store aggregate values. All right, they'll process the source data and then they'll compute aggregates and they will store them to speed up the query performance. Therefore, aggregate logic can never be changed without completely redesigning and reprocessing all of this data. That is something you would not do. In tabular, it's very different because your data is sitting in memory. There is no materialization of the aggregation values themselves. It is at query time with brute force scanning. It just scans through filters, group bys, aggregates on the fly. Now, this opens up an interesting and unique capability that when querying a model with DAX, not MDX, when querying a model with DAX, we can determine the aggregation logic in the query definition, not from the model definition itself. So this is exploited in an interesting way. Taking a look at this, see that I've got units here, and that's giving me the sum of units. But perhaps we want flexibility here. Sometimes I want to see min, max, average, count, maybe distinct count. The way that this is implemented is that back in the Power Pivot data model window, you'll see that all of the columns in this sales table are hidden. What is exposed are fixed calculated fields that encapsulate the aggregation logic. So what we see here is that units as a calculation is baked in. It's really sum of the quantity column. Well, what I'm going to do is delete this. The column that it's based on will then become unhidden. There is a configuration here on the advanced tab of the ribbon that says, how would this be summarized? This applies only to numeric columns. The default, which is the default, says to reporting tools like PowerView, you determine. You use the most common aggregate function, which is what? Sum, right. So PowerView's take on that, if it reads the metadata of this visible numeric column, it will by default sum the content of it. You as a developer can switch it explicitly to default to any of the six, or even do not summarize. The optimization may be, as is the case in Australia, our postal codes are four numeric digits. All right, now I would probably load that in as a text field. But if you chose to load it in as numeric, there would be the temptation to sum postal codes together. And as you can appreciate, that makes absolutely no sense. So you have control here about the initial. Let me specify that it should be max, just so we can see this from a demonstration perspective. The next thing we do is make sure that that column is adequately formatted, because now it's the format of the column that will be used. So a whole number, and I'll apply the thousand separator. Now, when I switch back to Excel, you see here that it recognizes that the structure of the model has changed, and therefore it's going to have to recompute. Just look that I had units here before, and then when I tell it that that's okay, it has to reset. And it's obviously dropped it because it no longer exists in the definition of the model. And when we take a look at the sales table, what we see now is that we still have three calculations, but the quantity has this sigma symbol next to it, denoting that we can make a choice about how to aggregate. So for this table, I can then take that new calculation and I'll drop it into position here. And you'll see that by default I'm getting max of quantity, and yet I have the ability to come in here and say, well, no, for this report I want sum. Okay. Unique capability, you'll never achieve this with a cube. And this is actually a compelling reason to consider. Instead of having six calculations in the model, min, max, sum, that's just really annoying and time-consuming. Just leave the column visible. Format it, maybe set a default summarize by, and this is the behavior you can achieve. Any questions about that? Yes. Last non-empty. So what you have is, well, in DAX you have like 32 time intelligence functions. Providing you have a date table correctly configured and you mark the date table, I would guess it's closing balance function. So have you worked with DAX before as an expression language? There's some great materials. In fact, if you just do a search on Bing, DAX Resource Center, Microsoft have this hub that has links to an extraordinary array of typically free resources. One of them is a white paper that I co-produced with Microsoft that goes through the very basics of DAX from beginning to the end. There's a short chapter in there on time intelligence functions. There's also a workbook you can download that includes a PowerPivot data model, and the formulas that are documented in the white paper are in that, so you can play around with them. Take a look at closing balance, opening balance functions with DAX. Okay, any other questions? Well, I have a question, because when we create data models, we like to talk about single version of the truth. And I produced this model that works very well now for PowerView. It's got nice formats, default images, and so on. But if I'm going to continue to use this in other ways, like pivot tables that use MDX, my last configuration might create a problem for me. So sometimes when you create a win, there's a loss associated to it. Can anyone imagine what that loss is with what I just configured? I go to sheet one and I add a pivot table. Home, insert a pivot table, insert this into sheet one, A1. And I look at the interface here, and I see that I have a sales table, and I have quantity, I have sales, and I bring in quantity. And sure enough, I get max quantity. But can I change the aggregate function of this? Yes, I can. Uh-oh, I just learned something. You couldn't do that in the prior release. The problem was, in fact, this will only work in a pivot table, so I'm half right now. What happens is, if you expose this and you use MDX to query the data model, so this is possible. I could publish the workbook to SharePoint. If the PowerPivot add-in is in SharePoint, I can connect to it by using reporting services. It will not discover a calculation. It wants a calculation that is baked into the model. So when you have visible columns like this, what it's going to do is build a hierarchy on that column. It's going to give me a hierarchy of all of the distinct quantity values. It's not going to let me aggregate them. Okay, so the pivot table's a little bit smart, and I'm just learning here that they've changed its logic to know this. But other MDX reporting tools will not have a calculation. So that's the price you'll pay. Flexibility in PowerView, but nothing to MDX experiences. Case being in 2010 that we only sold in North America, but in 2011 we continued and expanded sales operations into Europe as well. So this is happening because of the spatial categorizations. In fact, it doesn't have to be categorized, but it helps to categorize, because what will happen is that when you have text values in your data model, and the text values that I have here for the reseller would include names like Union City, California. How does it know where on a map these text values live? And the way that it achieves it is it uses the Bing Maps service, which is hosted on the internet. So several things to know about this is that you do require internet connectivity if working with mapping. If you store your geographic locations as text, as is the case here, then it must geocode them. It must send the values up to the service, geocode them, and then it returns with latitude, longitude, and accompanying images to plot on top of. So there are four things to know about geocoding that could be of interest to you. The first is there's a privacy issue. Some companies don't like the fact. Be aware that data isn't moving, it's just the labels themselves, but nonetheless, that's something that companies don't feel comfortable with. So what we'd suggest there is that you should not then store labels to define coordinates. You should store latitude, longitude directly in your model. So in this table for reseller, we could have a latitude column, longitude column. Both would be decimal data formats, and then you would categorize them as latitude and longitude. All right, and then you'll see here in PowerView that instead of using locations, you could put your fields, longitude here, latitude here. So the benefit is your spatial information is not leaving the organization. The second thing is performance. Geocoding can take time. And you'll typically see if you have 1,000 cities, it'll happen with about 5 or 6 seconds, but you can see them individually being plotted. That's a lot of communication that you might like to avoid. The next thing is if you do reach a limit like 1,000, it says that's enough. In this report, you've exceeded the limit to geocode. The fourth thing is accuracy. So I come from the city of Melbourne in the state of Victoria, in the country of Australia, and there just so happens to be a Melbourne in Florida. So if I put Melbourne in my report, in my data model, and then I wanted to plot the sales in Melbourne, what do you think is going to happen? Do we actually know what's going to happen? Is it deterministic? You know, I had theories about this. Paris, Texas, Paris, France. Well, Paris, France obviously is more well-known and popular. And I would have thought this is how it would work, but actually it's interesting. If I produce a solution, I test it back at home, beautiful. Melbourne plots down there on Australia. And then I send this workbook to a colleague in America and he opens the same workbook, it plots to Florida. And the reason is that it's deterministic in a sense, but it's based on your regional settings as well. Where are you coming from? And so it's sort of smart when you think about it, but this is not going to be smart if you want accuracy that it does find Melbourne, Australia. And so latitude, longitude, the geocoding of this is the only sure way that you will find what you need to find. Okay, by the way, if you need to disambiguate, the other approach could be that you can concatenate Melbourne, Australia, Melbourne, USA would actually geocode correctly. But that's not a good design when we're using tabular columns like this. I can't really put Melbourne, Australia in here. It doesn't really make sense. So by classifying the columns, the categorization that we did, we'll send additional data to say that this is actually Melbourne, a city. That won't help with Florida, USA, because both of them are cities, but it would help if you had a city and a state that had a similar name or a same name. The other way to get around it is if you do hierarchical navigation, that I force that a country and then even city could be in here, then when you drill down, for example, from USA down to California, and the fact that California has, I don't know, it must have a city that I think they have a lot of Spanish names, so they must have Los Angeles also somewhere down in South America. But if you drill down through this path, it will know that you've come from California to get to Los Angeles, so therefore it's not a Los Angeles down in Argentina or something like this. Okay, so that topic is about ensuring that you have accuracy, high performance, you have also the ability to secure your data, that it's not leaving the organization. So we would commonly recommend that you put latitude and longitude in the data model itself to ensure high performance and accuracy. And by the way, if you want to know how do I find that, well, simply by coming into bing.com and maps, you know, Melbourne could be typed in here. And I don't know German here, but what's it telling me? Nothing found. Don't you find that unusual that Melbourne's, you know, one of the... Oh, okay, well, thank you. So why do you have two text boxes? I've never seen this. What does this text box do here? Enterprise. Oh. Well, I can tell you, I use Bing all the time and I never see the two boxes. So this is a feature available to you guys in Austria. Okay, Melbourne and Australian. Okay, great. And there's the latitude, longitude. So if you do need to look it up, the service could help you right here. Just copy and paste into your data store. If I really meant Florida, just by putting comma FL, we'll show you that this is the Melbourne in Florida. Okay, so that could be part of your data model preparation as well. Any questions? Absolutely anything. That's correct. So, you know, the position of your cargo on the middle of the Atlantic. So long as they're valid latitude, longitude coordinates, it will just work. It doesn't question what could possibly be there. No, so polygons are not supported, only data points themselves. Any other questions? So the geography data type, so SQL Server since 2008 has geography and geometry types. These are not directly supported, but you have .NET methods on top of those types that will convert to the decimal equivalents. You must store decimal values in the data model. Okay, so in a query, a source query could convert the geography type to a lat and to a long with ease, and that's the value that you must have in the model. Okay, any other questions? Yes. So what you're saying is half correct. What happened is, and this is a sort of a long story, but I'll make it as short as possible given my time, that PowerPivot was first made available as an add-in. This is the SQL Server 2008 R2 add-in for Excel 2010 Professional Plus, 32 or 64-bit. That was the story. That's how we first saw PowerPivot. In the next release with Office 2013, the engine that was installed as part of the add-in became native and part of Excel, regardless of edition. It's called the Workbook Data Model. With Professional Plus, you continue to get an add-in called PowerPivot, and that add-in gives you a ribbon and the window that you design the model in. What this means is only in Professional Plus edition can you produce sophisticated data models by using the interface. For other editions of Excel, you're able to do basic things like import data, create relationships between sets of data, and simple calculations as in aggregates of single columns. You can achieve that without the PowerPivot add-in. The PowerPivot add-in with the ribbon in the window gives you everything else like categorization, hierarchies, and reporting properties. Does that answer your question? Right. Then that will be news to me because Microsoft keep publishing that Power Pivot and all the Power BI add-ins are Professional Plus Edition only. If you're telling me that Professional Edition has the Power Pivot add-in there as well? Yes, but there must be an edition for that. It's Home Edition, Academic Edition, Professional Edition. Professional Plus Edition is not available as a retail purchase. It's either through volume licensing or subscriptions. So I'm not disputing what you say. I'd be very interested to see this actually happen because Microsoft continue to tell me, and I represent them at events with their customers, that Professional Plus is the only edition for this. So Rob Colley's website. I would question this, and so I would just check on Microsoft.com about the product and details to be absolutely sure that PowerPivot add-in is available with that edition. Okay. And that's what I'd like to know. What edition is that? That there's got to be edition attached to it, and I'd be very fascinated to know that. Thanks for that feedback. Okay. Any other questions? Yes. No, I wish. So PowerView Sheets, you cannot then have a global filter across them. They are their own. But you can, with, at least with the slices, copy and paste them as a starting point. Not linking, no. I wish. So that means that the next sheet they move to will not take the context across as well. These slides are just really summarizing what I've mentioned. So because this is downloadable, if you go to SQLsaturday.com, you can download this presentation in PDF, and I've got additional information here. So everything I described is actually in notes. I'm not going to read through it again. Even the automatic calculated fields is detailed here for you. And so I think this is actually a good single reference for all of the topics and the how-to for optimizing and preparing your data model. Giving you some demonstrations. Before I go into this, I want to show you that there is a new capability here on the Advanced tab called Synonyms. All right, because my last demo will be that PowerView goes to a new level with the Power BI service in the cloud. If I take this workbook consisting of just a data model that has been prepared, and I publish it to the service, I secure it, it opens up a whole new capability with the Power Q&A feature that we can ask natural language questions. So much of the optimization already achieved for PowerView is relevant for Q&A. What is new is the ability to add synonyms. For example, in my sales table, I have a calculated field here, but sales could also be known as revenue. We need to think about the other words that could be used by people to query the model. And so we can now extend this. This is available only in Pro Plus edition with Office 365. I'm not sure why Microsoft haven't made it available to Office 2013 yet. I have already, we have some Chopins, beautiful. I've got 4 minutes, but I have done some preparation and I have published the workbook up to the Power BI site. What that enables someone to do, should they have permission, they would use a web browser, they would log in, they would then direct across to Power BI Q&A, and then what they have here is a set of featured questions. So this could be a starting point, but let's just go straight into it and ask a question about quantity. So do you see here it's suggesting that I could ask about quantity by salesperson by country? Just asking for quantity comes back with this 214,000. That is that visible column, okay? And you can see on the left-hand side here that it knows that it's querying the AW sales analysis. So what about quantity by country? And because of the categorization on the column, it's knowing to visualize this as a map. So quantity by country for fiscal year 2012. By country, by category. And now I see the product categories come in. I could change country to something else. What if we put state in here? And do you see that I typed that wrong? But that it prompts me for other things that might work there. Now, these are completely interactive at this point. You can then say, well, I'd actually see this as a line chart might be much more interesting. And then you can change even the definition of PowerView. This is all browser driven. You don't even need Excel on the desktop. You could also change filters. So you could do it interactively in the same experience that we have on the desktop, or you can just do it through natural language. And if you discover something that, you know, works really well, let's take this, you can copy and paste this into a featured question. And featured questions then become the starting point for people then to explore data. This is my question. The green tick here says that it could actually resolve that to a proper query. Let's show this on the home page of the site. Let's give it a large tile that will be yellow and that shows this icon, or even better, you know, if I come to images and it's something about, I'm going to do something just crazy, Bart Simpson, let's just choose him. There's the PNG reference, copy this, come back here, that will be the background image, save. And now people, when they come here and go, oh, that's the report I want, click, and the question gets asked, and they can continue to explore from here. And what I love about this new capability, with all the optimizations we did and the synonyms, that it will learn Featured questions auto-suggest, auto-complete are built in. So it's using the Bing search engine technology to help guide people through building up interesting questions. And you've got the complete exploration from here. That's a starting point. Maybe now I want to see that as a table. And then I can sort, I can filter, and so on. It's just an amazing new ability to share and make data readily available to business users. So it all ties nicely into the Power View optimization, add synonyms, and get the Q&A working. Okay, this is available with Power BI. This is Office 365 subscription. It, in summary, and I'll wrap up in these 1 minute, is it provides the ability to centrally store workbooks to secure them. Authenticated users can access through a web browser. No need to have Excel installed on the desktop. So the right browser, i.e. Safari, Firefox, connect, authenticate, consume, ask questions. The data in the data model can refresh automatically even from on-premises data stores with SQL or Oracle. And IT have monitoring across of this. Who's using what, when, how? And finally, the story is mobile delivery through desktop applications for Surface and Windows 8. So we could all be sitting in a meeting, connected through the cloud, interacting with the same data, having a sensible conversation on the single version of the truth. So that's the story that I have to tell you. PowerView now to Power BI Q&A. In summary, tabular models, we need to do a little bit more work once we've got the table, the data, the logic in place to make it exploit the new capabilities of PowerView and Q&A. So I've gone through all of that theory with you. I have some resources here that could be useful. Some videos on Power Pivot, PowerView. Reporting properties and table behavior require a little bit more knowledge. It's linked here. The Power BI, by the way, free trial for 30 days. You want to build this, you want to get your data and show what it could look like back to the business. At no cost, you can register and have that service and Q&A working for a 30-day period. And finally, there's a good blog that goes into much deeper discussion about Power BI with new features and commentary from marketing and engineering. Any questions before I close? Please feel free to download the presentation. I hope this has been of help to you, and thank you very much for the opportunity.